You're listening to Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by the Torn by Sports Podcast Network and blogtalkradio.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hey, John.
Hey, Alan.
How are you?
I'm great.
Awesome. Devin, how are you?
I've said it before, guys. I'm ready.
You're ready.
I'm ready.
We're ready.
Here. We're not just a preseason. We are to regular season NBA basketball. And from what I've seen in preseason, I'm pretty stoked about it.
Yeah. Where do we want to start, John? You want to start it with undefeated in preseason. I didn't catch last night. Do you want to start with last night? Did either of you watch it?
Yeah, I watched most of it last night. And, I mean, Sacramento looked worse than Perth. They looked like such a bad, undermanned team. Jazz just ran roughshod all over them. I think the score was 42-10 at one point. I mean, they just had their way. They could do everything. And I was watching that game going, I don't know if the Kings are going to win 20 games this year. That's how bad the Jazz made them look. And then, of course, in the second half, they rested their starters. And I think the second half was probably even. I don't remember what the final score was, but the Jazz won by like 30 or 40 points. And they were up 71-35 at the half. So, you know, it was fun to watch the Jazz just completely destroy an NBA team.
71 points in a half. Wow.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. After the first quarter, correct me if I'm wrong, John, but wasn't the offensive rating like 139 and the defensive rating was like a 42 or something crazy like that?
I'm sure it was.
I didn't look up those numbers,
but yeah.
But I watched the from about the middle of the first quarter once they started rolling, you know, and then I gave up by halftime. Halftime, I said, this is over. And I don't usually do that, but from what I did see, Utah looked great. I mean, everyone seemed to look pretty good, and I think the highlight for a lot of people this preseason has been Alec Burks. Did you like what you saw from him last night?
Yeah, Burks has looked really good. I mean, it's a tale of two teams, really. If you want to talk about the Sacramento game and the Portland game. Because in the Portland game, our starters got outplayed. And in the Sacramento game, completely different story. Now, they were able to beat Portland because our bench is deeper than their bench. And Sacramento, we're just deeper at every single slot on the roster. So, yeah, I felt kind of bad for Sacramento, really, that they're going to be this bad again. And you heard the fans booing somewhere like in the second quarter. They're like, this is just ridiculous.
I happened to read it this morning, you know, just when I woke up, I'm just laying there just chilling for a minute. And I opened up, you know, Twitter, and I saw Moni posted the, like she does after every game, the opponent's game thread.
Oh, awesome. I haven't looked at that yet.
I read it.
And it's one of my favorite things.
I do. After reading that, I agree with you. I feel bad for Sacramento fans because it's doomsday for all of them. And you could hear them talking about it. And they had nothing but good to say about the Jazz. In fact, one of them, I think, I can't remember, called out one of the color analysts for Sacramento. He used to play for Sacramento. Why am I not thinking of his name? He was a 3-and-D specialist for Sacramento back in the early 90s.
Bobby Jackson?
No, early 2000s. He was the two guard or swing or the wingman that played.
Doug Christie?
Yes, Doug Christie. So I guess he's the color analyst. And one of the guys quoted in what he said about saying, I don't think Utah's that good. And the guy quoted it, and then he turns around and he says, shut up, Christie. it was just funny hearing them go off even on their own color analyst, but interesting to hear that they didn't even agree with Doug Christie and what he was saying about the Jazz. A lot of these guys were just saying the Jazz are for real. I mean, they're top three in the West. So it was really sad to read those comments.
Well, by saying that Utah's not that good, it just says that Sacramento is that bad.
Right. Right.
So, you know, I don't think they're defending Utah. I think they're trying to hold on to any hope that they have of Sacramento being a better team. But I got to give it to their fans, you know, because Sacramento has been a dumpster fire since the C-Web days. You know what I mean? It seems like once he left, has Sacramento done anything? I mean, we're talking the last almost 15 years, it seems like.
Yeah, they had a winning record the year after he left, and then they've been in the lottery ever since.
So, I mean, to still be showing up and still be fans and still be passionate about your team, you know, hats off to them, because that's a rough run. You know, we had a few bad seasons, you know, we'll call it what it is during the Tyrone Corbin years. And then, you know, giving Quinn a year to turn it around. But I don't think Utah fans have experienced anything near what Sacramento fans have. So,
yeah, I feel horrible for them. I do.
Can you imagine? 15 years of lottery and no hope? I mean, there's no light at the end of the tunnel for what Sacramento's doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going through Moni's thread, and this stuff is hilarious. One guy says season tickets. Anyone want to bargain on season tickets? And someone else says it's like trying to sell someone herpes.
Oh, and then, well, wait till you get further down. Somebody screen captured this, and I saw it too, but I read it. A guy says this halftime balancing act is more exciting than the game. And he goes, I bet Utah doesn't have anything fun like that for halftime, a balancing act. That's got to be what we have that makes us good tonight. And then somebody responds and says, no, Utah has a guy that goes out and balances his wives. His many wives. So it was.
Here's one. So the halftime juggling dude had a higher shooting percentage, 33%, than the Kings team, 27%. And he was on a 10-foot unicycle.
I'm telling you, this stuff is sad. Wow. So yeah, I mean, I don't know if we expected anything different from Sacramento, to be honest. The preseason, Jazz are 5-0, undefeated. Anything to take out of preseason, John?
Well, two of them were not against NBA teams, so right. Those are gimmies. So they're basically 3-0. And
does Sacramento count as an NBA team, though?
Barely. We got to play them at least three times, so there's three gimmies right there. One thing I think the Jazz need to be mindful of this coming season is to not let those easy games go early.
Like, agreed.
Phoenix was terrible last year, and I think the Jazz was their first. What was it? Yeah, the Jazz lost to Phoenix really early in the season, and it was like if they had not slept on a couple of those early gimme games, then, you know, they would have had a shot at the third seed in the playoff. And they need to remember 82 games, all 82 matter. And I'm hoping that the Portland game woke them up a bit, that, you know, this is what a real team's like, and this real team's starting five beat your starting five. I think that was behind some of their fire in Sacramento, but Portland's a much better team than Sacramento.
Well, and you can, even then, you can go back to the Toronto game. I felt like, and I wasn't at it, but I did watch it, Toronto felt to me like an actual season game. The way they played and the way it got real chippy at times, that Toronto game felt like a real, you know, season NBA game. And you look at what happened. I mean, the starters played well, and then in the second quarter, you saw the bench come in, and their second unit in Toronto, I can't say enough about them. I know, I don't know if we've talked about them in the past. That second unit in Toronto is very good, very defensively sound and very, very good. And so you got to give them credit, but the Jazz can't let things like that happen against the good teams either. You can't go and sit your starters and then your second unit get blown out of the water by the opposing second unit. Can't happen. So there are some things to definitely take as a team from the preseason. So, I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait. Next week. What's today's date? I can't even.
What is?
Today is the 12th.
The 12th. So
and the first game is the 17th.
17th.
Wednesday the 17th at Sacramento.
At Sacramento, opening night. Yep. And then.
Wait. We get to do it again?
Yes, we do.
Yep. Can we like fly the starters home and just leave our unit there?
Yeah. Well, but see here, this is where it gets interesting because you have that game and then you have Friday night at home hosting Golden State, right? Home opener. Yep. So get the tail of two games right off the bat. Get the worst team and then you get the best team two different nights. And I don't know how you're going to be able to gauge just how good the Jazz are off of those two games either. We're just going to have to see what happens.
I'm not scared.
It's a late game too. So
it is. 8:30 tip off. So
last year we beat Golden State by like an average of 28 points. I'm not worried about them.
So, yeah.
And they lost some of their best players too.
Wow. You're going
JaVale McGee.
I don't think Nick Young's on the team anymore. You don't got Swaggy.
Yeah, no Swaggy, no good.
I think David West retired.
Yes, he did.
See, I mean, who do they have?
West got his ring and said, I'm good. So, all right. Moving on. You had a little note in here about the Ringer.
I was listening to the Ringer podcast and they did a league pass draft where there was five or six of them, and they did a snake draft on teams that they wanted to watch on league pass. And Juliet Littman had the first pick and she picked the Utah Jazz. And she said that they're going to be fun. They're going to be a high seeded playoff team. And part of her logic was that league passes for those teams that don't get all the national games. So, you know, that the Warriors and the Lakers and everybody, they're going to be on national TV a ton of times. And so the Jazz she picked as one of those teams that's going to be good, is going to be fun, and doesn't have as many national games as those other teams. And so when it starts coming time to look at playoff seeding, she's going to feel like that much more knowledgeable fan on what the Jazz bring to the table.
Agreed. Yeah. Devin, you have any thoughts? You look like you're about to say something.
I think that's a great way to look at it because, I mean, the Lakers are getting a ton of games. I don't know how many Utah has. I know we have a lot more than we had a season or two ago, but it's still nothing compared to the LeBron show. I'm not even going to call it the Lake show. It's the LeBron show.
Yeah, pretty much.
Do you have the results of that? I'm curious who else they took. Like, you know, top five.
I listened to it. I didn't write it down, but I just remember the Jazz went first, and two of the last three teams were the Spurs and the Grizzlies. Nobody wanted the Spurs.
That's but interesting. There
were some high picks for drama, like the Bucks were up there because of Giannis and because of new coach and different things going on. Denver was a high pick. Different teams like that where there's a lot going on there. And then one of them that went fairly high was the Wizards, because when you throw in Dwight Howard into a locker room, don't like each other, that should be some high drama. So they're looking at all kinds of things like that.
I wonder where Jimmy Butler fell.
They were somewhere in the middle.
Not the Wolves. Just Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler and the third stringers. I want to know where that team wants to be viewed.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, you know what? Since you bring him up, let's go ahead and segue from Jazz news, and let's just drop right into the NBA news and notes segment, and let's just hit it off with Jimmy Butler. Wow. I mean, I know the two of you have kept up on what's going on, and I would imagine most of our listeners have, but holy crap. Speaking of Butler, what, 2 days ago in practice goes off, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this was great. Butler had been invited to stay away as they were working on getting a trade done. It sounded like they were close in a trade with Miami, but I can't remember if this is confirmed or not, but the belief was that Minnesota wanted to send Gorgui Dieng in the trade as well. And he has a lot of money that he just got with his new contract, and Miami did not want to do that. And for whatever reason, the talks were falling apart. And so they went ahead and asked Jimmy Butler to come to practice and Jimmy Butler grabbed all the third string guys and took on the Minnesota starters and just was just dominated. I don't know if they actually won or not, but I know he just outplayed everybody and then he called everybody out. There's a lot of bad blood between him and Karl Anthony Towns. He does not respect Towns. He doesn't respect his work ethic. And it just exploded. And then, of course, Jimmy invited Rachel Nichols to come up and said something's going to happen. And so he did this big stunt and he blew it up. And you have to know that Thibs was thrilled to have this drama going on, but I can't imagine the owner and the GM were too happy with what was going on.
Okay, let me read this for a second. This was a piece written by Chris Haynes for Yahoo. He quotes that Wiggins, or he says Butler shows up and quote says, "I ain't never seen some expletive like that. Jimbo showed out." So he starts calling out guys. So then he gets out there on the court and starts playing, and then he turns and looks at Thibodeau. Looks at Scott Layden, former Jazz GM, and just goes off. They ain't expletive. They soft. He turns around. He continues on. He can't. He talks about how he's guarding Anthony Towns. He goes down and takes him in the post and guards him. Anthony Towns ends up having to pass out of the post to because he couldn't handle what Butler was doing. And Butler says he can't do expletive against me. Yells it out to those on the court. And it continues. I mean, there's more quotes here where, and I'm trying to find the one that really where, and it's not, I'm not seeing it, but there was one where he just blew up and said something about how you expletive need me. Looks at Thibs and looks at Layden and says, "You guys need me. You can't survive without me," basically. Really heated, really interesting to hear some of the media reports saying that it was just very impressive what took place, right? So I don't know. And I've been having a conversation with one of our listeners, Brett, and via text the last couple of days too. I don't know how I feel about Butler's actions on this. I mean, justified or not, what do you think, John? Was it justified for him to do this?
No, not really. I think it was bad for them to invite him if they're going to invite him. I don't think it was very professional on his part. I can't completely fault him because they did invite him, and he's just a guy that has a really high work rate, and the personalities between him and Towns just aren't meshing together. You have Wiggins and Towns, who are two number one picks who have gotten their big contracts, but the records of their teams hasn't justified it yet. And when Butler was out, Minnesota was a lottery team. And when Butler came back from injury, they got back in the playoffs.
So his beef is valid, but the way he handled it is where you would draw the line.
Yeah. He went in there with intent to nationally embarrass Towns and Wiggins. And he did. Because he called Rachel Nichols and he said, "Hey, something's going to happen here." He does that in practice, and he immediately goes to her and just makes sure that this is a national story, what he did.
Right. Right. Devin, what do you think?
I disagree.
You think it was...
I'm on Jimmy Butler's side, and I did not think that I would say that.
Wow.
Because here's the thing. For me, this is not the starting point of the story. And that's what a lot of people want to think is, oh, he demands a trade. There has to have been things building up to this moment. You have to think that when he arrived in Minnesota, he was excited about playing with Cat. He was excited about having this new start, about being out of Chicago. And you have to assume that conversations have taken place along the way of, hey, you need to do this. Hey, we need this, you know, kind of pushing for more out of these guys. And he's not getting it. And so if he wants to be traded out, yeah. Is it a very friendly way of going about it to come in and humiliate someone in practice and make sure everyone knows about it? No. But sometimes that's what it's going to take.
Interesting.
You're telling me that Karl Anthony Towns, a number one pick, and the guy who was picked in our GM survey that we talked about last year as the guy that people would build around, cannot handle Jimmy Butler in the paint.
Granted,
Butler's a great defensive player, but he's a three.
Right.
Or he's a two. He is not a center. And Carl Anthony Towns should be able to eat his lunch there. So, no, I'm fine with it, honestly.
And interestingly enough, afterwards, it was reported that Carl Anthony Towns called a huddle of everybody over and kind of just tried to calm everybody down, too. Tried to be the leader there. And then, of course, reports are coming out that yesterday Jimmy Butler called a players-only meeting. So, you know, And that's why I asked both of you this, is the conversation I was having with Brett. I mean, he's calling Jimmy Butler his new hero. But to be fair, he agrees with me when I said, look, I find it slightly unacceptable. I mean, for a teammate, you can't do that. You can't throw your teammates under the bus like that. You shouldn't. I mean, you go back to the Jazz days. Karl Malone was, I guess I can't use this example because he did. He threw Greg Ostertag under the bus a couple of times, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, but that was Greg Ostertag.
I know.
The 27th pick.
Right, right. It wasn't Carl Anthony Towns. That's my thing. You don't want to start the season off and you're right. This is not the beginning. This is the middle. And you're already had trade situations. This whole season's volatile for the Timberwolves. It just is.
You're telling me look at and Jimmy Butler is not on the same level. But you know Kobe Bryant did this to his guys.
He did it to he and Shaq had it out before Shaq left.
You know, Michael Jordan had to have done this to his guys. If he's not getting production out of someone, you know that he was going off in practice.
Oh, he did. In fact, I've read some stories where he did go off in practice on him a few times.
And bringing it closer to home, you talked about Karl Malone. If you were getting pathetic defensive output from someone, what do you think Rudy Gobert would do in a practice?
Well, I'm sure he'd let everybody hear it.
I'm sure he would not call Rachel Nichols and say, hey, I'm going to make a story for you.
No, and therein lies, Devin, I think, where you draw the line. I think the fact that he wanted to make a national spectacle out of it, that was a mistake. That shouldn't have happened.
I think, was Nichols there? Nichols was there for an interview.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think Nichols was called there because of the practice. Maybe I'm naive, I'm wrong.
She was. Butler called her in advance and told her to come. Because there would be a story.
Why do you think there were so many eyewitnesses to it that spread it out there, like Chris Haynes and everything? Is a lot of people were there to experience it firsthand because I think they all had the drop early on that it was going to happen.
See, I guess it's just my attitude. I think Butler has a right to be pissed at this point if that's the kind of output that he's getting from guys. And he even said in the Rachel Nichols interview that the most talented player on their team was Towns. That the person with the most God-given talent was Wiggins. And the guy who works the hardest was him.
Yep.
And I think that's where the problem is here, is he's seeing guys who should be better than him who aren't. And aren't making the effort to get better.
Butler was what pick in the draft again?
He was either low first or he might have even been a second.
That's what I'm trying to remember. I think he came in very much under the radar. His first season in Chicago, he surprised a lot of people.
Actually, he wasn't that good his first year. He really took off.
Oh, sorry, his second year.
When about would he have been drafted? 2010-ish?
He's
30, so...
Sounds about right. He joined the team that already had Derrick Rose on it.
He was taken 30th overall.
30th. Okay.
2011, first round, 30th pick.
There you go.
2011. That's the same year that Alec Burks was taken, right?
Uh-huh.
Ahead of him. That's the same year that, wasn't it Kawhi Leonard was taken that year too?
Yep.
You had all these guys taken ahead of him, and there he is at 30, and look what he's done for himself in the NBA.
Actually just turned 29, it looks like.
He's got that chip on his shoulder, and he has for a while.
And look at his career. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's a four-time NBA All-Star, two-time All-NBA third team, four-time All-Defensive second team, and he was the most improved player back in 2015. So, it took a couple seasons for him to take off.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I can't fault the guy too much.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Okay. That is the Jimmy Butler news. Let's move on. So let's set everybody up. We have not done our predictions yet. So we're going to transition from that into our predictions for this year's NBA awards. John, let's go ahead and start this off. I'll warn the listeners and you, I'm going to piggyback a little bit off of the GM survey, because I'm going to go there because I can look at some of the things they talked about. Not going to necessarily go with some of their thoughts, but I'm probably going to piggyback some of my picks off of what we read or change them based on what I saw. So let's kick off our picks.
Okay. First, let's do MVP.
Okay. I've been thinking about this all week. Every year we say the same guy, and I want to say the same guy because he's the best player in the NBA, and that's LeBron James. I'm going to change it this year. I think LeBron's effect will be MVP-ish for the Lakers, but I think the MVP this year, I'm going to go with Anthony Davis. I expect Davis to have that kind of a year.
Wow.
I do. I expect him to have that kind of year.
I think to give it to a player whose team does not get home court advantage, they have to have an incredible statistical year. So in that respect, I could see AD getting it.
And I'm just judging alone off of what he did. I'm judging alone off of what he did in the playoffs last year, John. Look at what he did in the playoffs in the first round. Nobody expected that, did they? Nobody.
Nobody expected they would be as good as they were going to be after Cousins went down.
Yeah. I think they're going to be better than expected this year. A lot of people pick them the bottom, and I guess that's fair. I think he is going to surprise a lot of people this year, or maybe not surprise, but I'm throwing out my off the wall pick. It's going to be Anthony Davis as MVP.
That's not an off the wall pick. it's really not, because he was the person I was thinking of too.
And the GM survey has him picked third behind LeBron and Durant. So who are you picking, Devin? You're going with Anthony Davis?
I need to think about this for a minute, because okay. I've got about five names floating around in my brain that I'm trying to figure out who to pick.
Okay, John, who are you picking?
I'm going to go with Giannis.
Ooh, another one. See,
I think, I mean, last year we did our second place, so I'm going to have LeBron as my second place pick.
Same.
I mean, he's going to make the Lakers a playoff team, but statistically, I don't know how great he's going to be.
Right.
With Giannis, though, I think with the new coach and who wants to like display him more, Giannis already had incredible numbers last year, but I think this year the Bucks are going to be a top four team in the East, and therefore I think he's going to get the look. And you know, factor in a little East Coast bias, I think it can go to Giannis this year. Now, Alan, who is your second pick?
LeBron.
Okay. And now, Devin.
You've had time to think, Dev. Come on.
I've had time to think. And of course, LeBron's got to be in the mix. LeBron is the most valuable player.
Absolutely.
I don't know that he'll get the award, because it seems to be forgotten that he can win that award. Other people that I think are in the mix were Davis, Giannis. I'm actually going to put Kawhi back in that mix. And then I think your reigning MVP also has to be considered a threat with James Harden. See, I want to pick Kawhi. I don't know that he'll get it because of how well Toronto did last season, if that makes any sense. But why not? I'll throw Kawhi in just so we have a little diversity in our picks. I'll put AD as my runner up.
Wow, so you bumped LeBron down a little.
Yeah, I don't think LeBron is there to be an MVP.
I don't think so either. I think we all agree on that.
I think LeBron could. I mean, if LeBron wanted to, he'd go in there, he'd play 82 games, he'd be a wrecking crew. You know, he's going to elevate everyone's level of play, but I don't think LeBron's there putting massive minutes on his body when he doesn't have to. He's not contending. The
Agreed.
Lakers are not contending for a championship. Cleveland was. Even though you basically knew they were going to get rocked by Golden State in the playoffs or in the finals. He knew that he could make it to the finals. I don't think he sees himself making it to the finals this year.
No.
So, you know, take that for what it is.
Okay.
Okay. Last year we did our finals picks. All of us picked the Warriors to beat Cleveland in the finals. What do you think it's going to be this year?
Well, until they prove us wrong, I just think the Warriors are going to be there again. And I think it's going to be the Warriors and Boston. And I think the Warriors are going to beat Boston. I still don't think anybody in the East can match the Warriors. I think in the West, it's a little closer than it was last year, but I still don't think anybody's going to beat them in the West either.
That was my pick too, was Warriors are going to beat Boston. I would love to believe that the Raptors would be there, but I really don't know.
Same. And I'd love to believe that either the Jazz or Houston can challenge Golden State in the West, and I still want to believe that. I don't think that's going to happen, and they may prove us wrong midway through the season, but I just don't see it.
Okay, and then who is your dark horse to get in the finals?
In the East, it would be Toronto for me, and then in the West, I'm going to say the Jazz. Why not? Just going to say it. That's my homer pick. Devin, what about you?
Mine is the exact same. Honestly, I think Boston is now the team to beat in the East. I think they do so, but I think Toronto has the ability to do so. That's why I put Kawhi as my MVP pick, is because I don't think he's going to lose a step defensively. I think he'll be back and be one of the elite defenders. And then if he puts his offensive game together, that's what I think will make him a contender, especially if he's on the best or the second best team in the East. As far as the sleeper pick in the West, I picked the Jazz because I don't think that, just going through the teams, I don't think Houston is going to be any better than they were last year with what they lost and what they added. I think it's a lose-lose with what happened this offseason for them. Oklahoma City will be better this year, but I don't think they're there. Portland, Lakers, who else is going to be there besides the Jazz? You know, if the Jazz are able to roll like they did at the end of last season, and they've proven they can compete with Golden State, I think they're one of the only teams that could eliminate the Warriors in the playoffs.
Yeah, that was all my pick as well. I have Warriors beating Boston in the finals, and my dark horses are Utah and Toronto. Last year, since we were all the same, we said how many games are they going to win in. Devin was closest with 5. So how many games do you think the finals is going to go?
I'm saying 6.
Yep, that's where I was at. Series ends 4-2. You gonna pick the same, John? Then we can like break it down to something else, like how many turnovers there's gonna be, or
I'll go 7.
Oh, John.
Maybe I want to go 5. I don't know.
See, here's my thing. I don't think it's going to be that big of a landslide in the finals. I think Boston is a better team than that Cavaliers team. When healthy. So if they remain healthy, I just think that it's going to be a much more competitive series.
Yeah. Defensive player of the year. Last year, we all picked Rudy and we're right. What do you think it's going to be this year?
I'm taking Rudy, and my second place is going to be Kawhi. And I'm going to go third place too, because I think third place is going to be Draymond. I think that's your top three.
I'm the exact same again. You know, I think Rudy's been the best defensive player the past 2 seasons. He only got it once. And with the return of Kawhi, like I said, I don't think he loses much of a step. So I think Quinn's system helps to elevate Rudy just a little bit above where Kawhi's going to be at. But, you know, and like you said, Draymond's always in the mix.
And John, I know we don't usually do a dark horse, but I'm just going to throw this out here. There is a player, and they don't usually do this, but there's a guard that I think could definitely get some consideration. Drew Holiday.
Really?
I think he's a good defender. I think he's a really good defender.
See, if I were going to throw a wing into the picture, I'm throwing Roberson in.
Well, okay, that's right. I left off Roberson. My bad. Roberson's also in that mix. But I'm judging off of what we saw from Drew Holiday in the playoffs last year, too, the way he locked guys down, especially in that Portland series. I just think Drew Holiday consideration. You're right. I forgot about Roberson. Can't keep him out of the mix on that either.
Go bold, John.
Go ahead, John.
Take James Harden. Carmelo Anthony, Defensive Player of the Year.
I'm thinking Towns. No, Rudy's my first. And
he can't go different.
I think Draymond's going to be my second.
He did. Wow.
Draymond second, Kawhi third. Yeah.
Do you agree with the Roberson thought from Devin, though? I mean, Roberson deserves some consideration, too.
Yes. Yes. But I think this year the Warriors are going to be the number one seed in the West, and therefore Draymond's going to get a closer look.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Coach of the Year.
I'm going away from the homer pick here simply because I just see I'm going Brad Stevens, but I'm saying Quinn number two. Although you know who's going to get consideration. Shoot, Budenholzer might even get some consideration with what he does up in Milwaukee.
No.
He just won like 3 years ago.
I know he did, but that doesn't mean he can't be considered again. Go ahead, Devin. Who's your picks?
Coach of the Year is Luke Walton.
Really? you know what? That's not a bad pick. That's not a bad pick.
You are adding so many egos to that locker room.
And you're likely turning a team that has been the bottom half of the playoff race for the last
they
haven't even been in the playoffs, and you're turning them around into a mid, possibly a mid, you know, 4, 5, 6 seed. That's
I think you'll have a lot of people who say, well, LeBron's the coach, you know.
No.
Because we've said that. I still, Ty Lue, really, in his rookie season as an NBA coach, I hope he gets some consideration. But Luke Walton is going to play a big role in how this all goes down in LA.
I agree.
And I think with the Lakers turning around, I think he's, I'm taking him because I don't want to be predictable with this. I don't want to take Brad Stevens. You know, Quinn Snyder, I'd love to say, and I think Quinn absolutely could. But I want to go a little bold here, and so I'm taking Luke.
Okay. John?
Who's your second?
Oh, yeah, who's your second?
Do you want a safe pick, or do you want me to be bold again?
What you want.
Who's your second? You do you, Devin.
Brad Stevens. I'll take a safe one.
All right, John, who's your picks?
I'm going to pick Quinn Snyder.
Nice.
I think Boston will... Their record will be about the same, maybe a few games better, but the knock against him will be, but now everyone's healthy. So of course you're going to win all these games. I think Snyder's coming back with the exact same roster, but they're going to be, you know, 3 or 4 games better. He came in second last year. And so I think they'll go ahead and give it to him.
And your second pick?
Stevens.
Okay. All right.
All right. Rookie of the Year.
This is where I don't know. I am going to go. Oh, shoot. See, Trae Young sticks in my mind, but I don't think Trae Young's going to be it this year. No. Don't look at me like that, Devin. I know. I don't know why he all of a sudden came to mind, but I don't think he's going to be it.
You want me to take this one?
Yeah, you take this one.
It's Luka. Luka's your rookie of the year. Ayton's your runner-up.
Wow, okay. I think there are some other... I just think there are some very good rookies on this list that might have a say in the matter. For example, is it Jackson in Memphis that we can't talk enough about?
We can talk enough about him.
No.
But it's still Luka.
Okay. Well, then I'm going to go opposite of Devin just because I can, and I'm going to say Ayton.
No, opposite of me would be Trae Young.
No, I'm going to say Trae Ayton. Young is I'm going to say Ayton. I'm going to say Ayton. Yeah, I'm not up in the rookie of the race this year. Rookie of the year race this year, but yeah, I'll just go Ayton. What about you, John?
Devin's right. Doncic first, Ayton second.
Okay.
You know that's right.
Ayton's doing 18-10 in the preseason, but Doncic is going to be on a better team, and he's also going to have more versatile stats to be showing off.
Okay.
He can do. He will see Doncic. I see him being like 14 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds, a steal, and a block every game.
All right.
Sixth man.
All right. The first player that came to mind on this one, and because there's a few good ones, there really is. Is Rozier a sixth man?
He can be.
Okay, then I'm going to pick Rozier because I liked what he did last season, and I could see him do it again. So I'm going with Rozier.
Who's your runner-up?
Who's your second?
Oh, gosh. Oh, I haven't had a chance to think about who all the other guys are. I don't know. Don't roll your eyes at me, Devin.
Come on.
I don't know. I'm just picking Rozier because that's my first pick. I don't know who.
All right.
Go ahead, Devin.
I'll take this one. Your sixth man of the year is who it always is.
Who?
Lou Williams, sixth man of the year.
Oh.
Then your runner-up is actually not going to be Scary Terry. I'm sorry.
Really?
It's going to be Marcus Smart.
You think Smart comes off the bench sooner for him than Rozier does?
Yeah. I mean, I think your starting lineup in Boston is Kyrie, Gordon, Tatum, Brown, and Horford. So, I mean, someone's got to come off the bench, and I think it's going to be Marcus Smart.
Okay.
And then I'm going to give you your third.
Who?
Alec Burks.
Oh, little bold pick at number three there.
I really don't.
Who is your runner-up?
I didn't have one, but now that we've been talking about it, all right, I'll give it to Lou Williams. It was either Lou Williams or could I go Eric Gordon again?
Yeah, you could.
Yeah, I mean, I can go either one of those guys again.
Yeah, I'm going to guess Lou Williams, but my runner-up is going to be Kyle Kuzma.
See, Kuzma was another guy in mind for me, but I just wasn't sure how that whole roster is going to play out.
Kuzma's a good pick.
Yeah, Kuzma's a great pick, I think.
All right, most improved player.
Okay, this is where my homerism comes in again. I think it's going to be Dante Exum.
I thought you might pick Burks.
No, I'm going Dante. I mean, Burks is another guy that I could see as improved, but I think that we're going to see something extra special from Dante this year. And as far as my runner-up goes, Brandon Ingram. I think Ingram's going to benefit probably the most from LeBron James. And I think Ingram's going to have himself a very fine season for the Lakers.
Ingram was my runner-up guess last year. I'm going to go ahead and pick him to win it this year. I think LeBron's just going to make him look better in
without question. Without question.
And my runner-up, I'm going to go with Zach LaVine. I think he's going to have a breakout year in Chicago.
That's not a bad pick either.
See, I have a problem because I don't know how injury is going to play into this.
Uh-huh.
Your leadoff is mystifying.
Markelle Fultz.
Okay.
Oh.
Very nice.
I don't know where he didn't play a full season or for most of the season last year, how many votes he'll get. If they treat it as his body of work last season against what he's going to do this year, then he should win it. But I'm not sure that's how they'll vote. So I'm going to say Brandon Ingram number one and Fultz number two, just based on that, how I think they're going to proceed the voting. But I think Fultz will absolutely be deserving of it.
With an asterisk next to Fultz based on...
Yeah, right. Based on,
we
didn't get a full sample last season, so we can't really say how much he's improved.
Right.
That sort of thing. But he's definitely someone I want to keep an eye on this year.
Okay.
One note I just wanted to make, Grayson Allen is sixth in scoring among rookies this preseason.
That ought to count for something too. And he's shooting lights out from downtown.
Yeah, 52% from three.
Yeah. That's worth noting.
In fact, I just pulled up the rookie stats of preseason. He also has the best plus minus. He is at 14.6, averaging 14.6 plus minus. I mean, granted, he got those two foreign games in there.
And
Sacramento, and halfway a foreign game.
And he's playing on a very good Jazz team. So around some,
yeah,
with some guys around him that are actually really good too. But yeah, that is worth noting when talking rookie talk. You already said you're sixth man. So what's up next on the list?
We did most improved, so we're good.
Wait, we got to talk about executive
of
the year.
You had executive of the year on your list.
That's right.
And
we
there are some
executive last year.
There are some good candidates on this list too, I think.
Okay, executive.
And I'm just going to say right now, Daryl Morey does not, I'm not putting him on that list. I'm not. He got it last year, right? Didn't Morey get it last year?
Yes.
I'm not putting him on that list this year. I'm not. So now we can, I'm going to take him off, but there's a few that deserve, that'll deserve some look.
Okay, I'm pulling up a list of general managers so I can get an idea. I am going to guess Sam Presti.
For
getting rid of Melo.
Okay.
Getting Schroeder. I think they're going to have a, I think their record is going to be in the 50s. I think they're going to go ahead and give it to Presti.
Okay.
My runner up would be Rob Pelinka, because he did get LeBron. He did a lot of other weird additions, but he did get LeBron.
Okay. I'm actually going to take your number two, and I think that's going to be my number one. I think Pelinka. I think what he did, what the offseason moves he made for the Lakers, I think speak volumes. And if it turns out to be, you know, that they make the playoffs as a 5 or 6 seed, then he absolutely deserves a lot of consideration for that. Otherwise, my runner-up would have to be, oh, shoot. I'm trying to think of what else, who else has made moves that, I mean, I could go with.
Well, I'll tell you, my third place is Ujiri.
Who?
Masai Ujiri. Because if I think it is going to work out with Kawhi, and if Toronto's top two in the East, and that means their rookie coach is doing pretty good, and the Kawhi trade wound up being a good thing after all, I think he would get consideration as well.
Well, I would give him consideration just based on the fact that it was a bold move, right? It was bold. Because I don't think anybody expected him to ship off his star and bring in Kawhi Leonard. So, no, I'll go with you. That's my number two pick. That's my number two.
Ujiri?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, how do they do this? Is it always the GM, or is it the president of basketball operations? Because do you give it to Magic over Pelinka?
I just pulled up the Wikipedia's list of NBA general managers, and it lists Pelinka. So yeah, I'd go with Pelinka.
And in my opinion, I mean, it's executive of the year, so it could be general manager or it could be president, because either or is an executive. So I'm sure you can't go wrong with either one.
So I'll go Magic, because I feel like Magic is the one who made this happen for LA.
I mean, I don't think you can be wrong with Pelinka or Magic winning it together, really.
Right, and that's kind of how I'm looking at this. And then, because I wasn't sure, do you go with Ujiri or do you go with Bobby Webster, who is the GM? Isn't Bobby Webster the GM for the Raptors this year?
Yeah, but I think Ujiri deserves the credit in that.
So I'm just wondering, who do you kind of pick? So I'll go with President of Basketball Operations, Ujiri, and and those are my two picks. Basically, I think we're all looking at the same things here. The big moves to get LeBron and to get Kawhi. You know, I don't know who else you go with. You know, do you go with Danny Ainge?
No.
I mean, it's the first time with a full healthy roster in Boston. So I think when you're finally seeing the product on the floor, that does merit some consideration.
And you know what? To your point with Magic, yeah. John, I don't know if you'll follow my thinking on this as well. But to the point of Magic that Devin brought up, look at what Magic has done the last couple of seasons to put trust in and bring in a guy like Luke Walton to coach. Clearly, and I think we all talked about this preseason last year and into the season, clearly Luke Walton has done a fine job with that young core group last year with the Lakers. Would you not agree?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm looking at the entire body of work that both Magic and Pelinka or Magic or whoever it has done with them. I have to believe that this year is the year that pays dividends for them, at least begins to pay dividends for them. And that's why I've got to put them at the top of the list for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's our picks. I can't think of any others. I think we have them all. So yeah, that's our NBA news and notes. Any other notes to throw on this week?
No, I think so. We're good.
Okay. All right. Moving on to one last NBA new note. DeJounte Murray.
Yeah, that's a big loss.
Huge loss for the Spurs.
I think I saw Derek White's gonna miss 6 to 8 weeks as well.
And Murray's got to be out for the season, right?
Yeah, Murray's out for the season. Roberson's out for, was it 4 to 8
weeks? Oh, yeah,
weeks.
Roberson's out again,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Roberson's out.
Found this out after last week's conversation.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of injuries going on.
But I feel bad for Murray specifically, and I saw that injury. I hate seeing those injuries, and I saw that non-contact. Knee gives, just did not look good. Feel bad because Murray is a promising young player who really was looking good for the Spurs. And so that's a huge blow for them, and it's a tough blow for him in his career right now, too.
I think he would have been one of those guys in the most improved player category this year. So
absolutely. He was going to be one of my picks for that. So, all right, that is it for NBA news and notes. Let's move on to Devin's quick hits.
We'll keep it short this week. Let's talk about last week, college football.
Do we have to?
We do. Utah upset Stanford. Are you guys shocked? Because Utah has not looked good.
I was shocked.
Okay, so with that, have the Utes made the turn this season? How are they going to look this week against an inferior opponent in Arizona?
I think they'll win.
I think they'll win, too. I mean, Arizona, we've already laid that out, is not very good.
Okay.
So I think the Utes, if the Utes lose this game to Arizona, there are bigger concerns. I think that game against Stanford is the best complete game that Utah has put on the field all season long.
Oh, by far.
Hands down.
So, okay. And let's talk about BYU.
Ew.
what'd you guys think last week? Is Utah State just that good, or is BYU not as good as maybe we were thinking? I mean, it's been a weird season, guys. When you think about it, BYU goes, they beat Arizona, who we say, okay, they're not very good. They beat Wisconsin,
who turned out to be decent. I wouldn't say top 10-ish, but decent.
Right, they're not as good maybe as we thought, but they're still a solid, you know, Power 5 program. Then they get destroyed by Utah State. Who's good and who's not? I don't know anymore.
Did I see right that they are going to switch quarterbacks at BYU?
I did not see that. I haven't kept up on the news. That's a possibility.
I saw talk about it. I don't know if a decision was actually made, but it looks like it is at least possible that they're going to swap quarterbacks.
Yes. Zach Wilson to start at quarterback for BYU against Hawaii. Do you like the move or do you not like the move?
Part of me says I don't like the move because I've liked to cheer on and be there, be behind Mangum on this, but you can't go wrong with the move right now. I mean, you might as well see what you can do to change things up.
John?
Yeah, I don't like it when they switch quarterbacks halfway through the season because usually the second half of their season is an easier schedule. They've gotten most of their hard games out of the way. Who's their most difficult opponent left?
Utah.
Yeah, Utah.
Well, Utah. Okay.
But aside from that, just to kind of give you a glimpse, they have Hawaii, Northern Illinois, Boise State, UMass, New Mexico State, and then they finish against
okay,
the
so
Utes.
Boise okay. might be also one of their toughest yeah. opponents. So Boise and Utah, they're two toughest games.
It's fine. I feel bad for Mangum, but I don't think their record is going to be any different between what they're going to be doing the rest of the year versus whoever the starter is.
And to answer your first question, yes, Utah State is that good.
Okay.
I don't think BYU's – I don't think we know how good BYU is yet.
I don't think so either.
I picked them to win six games to begin the season and make a bowl game. I still stand by it because I still think they will, which is an improvement over last year, mind you. But I don't know how good they are.
Do any of these losses fall – or like the – I guess this loss – does it fall on Tanner Mangum? Is it something Mangum was doing, or is it the offense, or you know what I mean?
No, defense. You've got to be able to defend. Okay. Utah State's offense is very good, but you've got to be able to defend. And to be fair, too, I saw some injuries going into that game. They had critical injury at tight end. I think Putu-Tau didn't play. And then, of course, Canada does not look healthy. I don't know if John, if you watched, if I just Canada doesn't look right to me.
I didn't watch the USU game, so I couldn't say.
He just hasn't.
They looked so good early, and then yeah. I was just really, really surprised what that final score wound up being.
And Canada looked good early on, but he has not looked great recently. And I don't know whether he's hurt or whatever, but I know they've got some key injuries across the board a little bit. But I just the defense. Devin, yeah, long answer short. Defense was not good in that game against Utah State.
Okay, so who are you taking, BYU or Hawaii?
It's at home or is it in Hawaii? I forget.
It is, I think it's at Hawaii.
It's at Hawaii?
No. It looks like a home game.
Okay, I'll take BYU.
Okay, home game, BYU.
I'll take BYU. Yeah, notice how John and I both were waiting to find out where it was at, because I think we both might have taken Hawaii.
That matters.
Okay. Speaking of Utah State, we'll just cover them as well. Love, their quarterback, looked fantastic. Jordan Love looks like the real deal.
He has all season.
For the Aggies. But also, I loved their running back, Darwin Thompson.
Yes.
5'8", but the kid just has a motor.
Yes.
Aggies will face off this week against, let's see, who did they have? Is it New Mexico? No. UNLV. They have UNLV this week. It's home game.
Utah State will win.
John.
Yeah, I'd give it to Utah State. Okay. I wanted to make one other comment on BYU. Apparently Canada only had 3 rushes last week.
Yeah.
So it does look like something's going on there.
Yeah. And by the way, Devin, come at me, anybody that wants to. Love is the best quarterback in the state right now.
I'm not arguing that.
So
I'm not, I think that's kind of just a given right
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. I think we're good to keep it short unless there's, let's do a quick UFC hit because there's a ton of talk about it online. Alan doesn't care.
even John, though I know what happened, but still go ahead.
Alan doesn't care. Maybe he'll chime in. What do you think of this whole thing with Khabib going after one of McGregor's guys and his teammates jumping McGregor after a loss? I mean, the fight was, I think, what a lot of people expected. But all the talk is about what happened after. Is this a bad thing for UFC? Is it maybe a good thing publicity wise? Does it make them the WWE? You're a wrestling fan.
Yeah.
You're a fighting fan. What do you make of all this?
I think you've been seeing elements of both UFC and WWE sneak into each other. You know, Brock Lesnar and Ronda Rousey are in WWE now. UFC, Conor McGregor acts like a wrestler. I mean, his promos, his interviews, he just takes on that persona, and it's part of what's allowed him to be a big star. There's been personal beefs between his team and Khabib's team. I think what they did was calculated and it was for publicity. I can't say I agree with it. When you just break out in brawls like that, I think in some ways it was a stain on UFC. At the same time, it did get the headlines. and it will generate excitement for the next Khabib fight. So,
overall,
I think it was a positive thing.
So you're saying that it was staged, some of it. My question to you is,
I don't think it was staged so much that I think Khabib and or his team knew what they were going to do at the end.
Okay. So
I don't think McGregor's team knew what was going
to
happen.
I saw in the news that this was a bit of a response to, it sounds like there's been between the two of them. Is that right?
Oh yeah.
In fact, what was it about throwing a chair into the bus? Was it?
Yeah. Did you miss it?
I saw that on the news. They were talking about it in correlation with this, I guess. But was that Conor McGregor that threw
yeah.
that chair?
Yeah, McGregor went after the bus that Khabib was on. Khabib didn't get off the bus. McGregor was arrested. That was a whole ordeal. What was that, about 6 months ago? So
this might have been Khabib's response.
There's been a lot of talk back and forth. And Khabib was saying, I don't know what was said, but that Conor had disrespected his country, his father, his religion. And you know, this is what happens when you run your mouth, essentially. So I don't know. I just kind of wonder what the perception of this is. Is it a big deal? Is it not a big deal? You know, when all is said and done, what does this mean for UFC?
Overall, I think it just means more interest next time there's a Khabib fight.
Okay.
Bottom line.
Alan's taking interest. He's like, I saw this.
No, I was.
I heard about, you see what's going on? Okay, let's wrap it up there. We'll jump over to pop culture.
All right, let's move on to pop culture. Now, I don't know what else we have to talk about this week, but Devin, you gave us homework last week. And so we're going to have to report on this homework, but you're going to have to admit on your report on this homework as well, because I don't think you followed through with it either.
No, I didn't. I did not make it through all of it, but I did make it through four episodes.
So for those who missed last week's episode, we were talking about Maniac, new series, just hit Netflix, and Devin wanted to get into it. So kick it off, Devin. This is pop culture is yours this week, so let's kick it off.
Maniac is a Netflix original series starring Jonah Hill and Emma Stone. I believe I got the right Emma.
Yes, you did.
And it's a very unique, seems to be very unique in the storyline. It kind of crosses, is it sci-fi? John, would you consider it sci-fi?
Yeah, it's sci-fi. And what's cool about it, I mean, I'm six episodes through, and I bet at the end it makes sense, everything. But they're on this trial for these drugs that are kind of looked at as alternatives to therapy, and these drugs send them into this dreamlike state where it's almost like a different reality. And so you'll be watching an episode and you can go almost the entire episode thinking you're seeing the real story and find out it's just another one of the dreams that the drug puts you through. And it's very strange at first, but I'd say around episode three, I was like, this is, I don't know if I can handle this weirdness, but every episode since, it just makes more and more sense. And I really love the journey it's going on. And I really can't wait for it to explain why everything is like 80s technology and yet super at the same time.
Oh, by the way,
really cool.
By the way, Jonah Hill. Wow. Lost some weight. A lot of weight. Looks good in this role.
Especially with the mullet. Did you guys like the mullet?
Yeah, that was trippy.
Maybe I haven't got that far with the mullet yet, because I'm seeing him early on. Yeah, so you haven't got to episode four yet. I started watching it last night. I don't remember how far I got, but I kind of dozed off, fell asleep. But it's slow for me to start, but Jonah Hill's character intrigues me a lot. I like his character. And Emma Stone's great. I'm looking forward to what she brings, and I know they're going to follow the two. You failed to mention one actress that shows up in this too. Big name, Sally Field. One of the doctors.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So, yeah. And then Gabriel Byrne, I'm not familiar with who he is. He looks familiar to me. John, maybe you know more where you've seen him.
Gabriel Byrne?
Please.
Usual Suspects?
Thank you. Thank you.
Miller's Crossing? I love Gabriel Byrne.
And I believe...
Yeah, he's his dad, right?
Yeah, he plays the father figure to Jonah Hill. So it was slow for me to start. And it is trippy. Oh, it's a total trip. To me, though, and that's what you're starting to talk about, reality and not reality. Jonah Hill, early on, though, gives off the impression that he's, I mean, the word comes to mind as schizo, but I'm not going to say schizo because I don't think that's it. But he suffers from delusions himself. And is that a result of the drug, or is that, or does he have legit issues prior to this study? I don't know. And that's, I'm like you. I'm like, what's reality and what's not? Because it seems like it flips between the two frequently.
And I'll be honest, I struggled with the first two episodes.
Yeah.
I didn't know if I could get into it. And then I watched two of them last night. And the two that I watched, I really enjoyed. And it started to make more sense. I'm not saying I understood, but it made more sense about why I was confused, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah. And man, episode 5 just really nails it for me, where I'm like, oh man, I have to watch the rest of this now. It's just so true. And most of it takes place at a 40s dinner party. It's really good.
So you're both are farther along than me, and so you're telling me to hang tight and continue on and trudge through it, because it gets good, gets better.
Yeah. And, okay. And I was looking at the times for the episodes, because I wondered how many I could fit in before we recorded this. And the last episodes, there's a bunch of them where they're only like 30 minutes long. So the story, I think, is going to pick up even more. And we'll see. John, I expect as you go to watch, you're just going to kind of cruise through and be like, I can't stop. You know what I mean? Because it takes a while to kind of set the hook. But once you get those short episodes, it just flies by, I think.
Yep.
So speaking of Jonah Hill, before I go on, so everybody take some time, Netflix, Maniac, check it out. It's worth it. I think we're all enjoying it. Before we get off of the subject of Jonah Hill, though, last night he was on Jimmy Fallon. John, he talked about his directorial debut.
Oh.
He's directing a new film called Mid-90s.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And they played, it's funny because Jimmy always likes to play clips, and he couldn't play a clip because the film made its debut September 29th at the Toronto Film Festival, I believe. But they couldn't play clips because there's just a lot of language in it, is the way Jonah put it. He's like, I can't find a good clip to play. So instead, Jimmy played a trailer for it. I'm intrigued, really intrigued. And Jonah talked about the creative process. He ended up getting one of his idols to actually do the score for the movie, Trent Reznor.
Cool.
So Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails, and he co-wrote it with, and I'm trying to remember the name of the other guy that did it with him. But anyway, very interesting to hear him talk about it. I'm intrigued. Mid-90s sounds like a good flick.
And I'm looking at it, and it is only playing, the closest theater to us up here in Ogden is Jordan Landing at Cinemark 24.
But I'll tell you what he said. It's based on mid-90s 13-year-old Stevie that lives in Los Angeles with his abusive older brother Ian and the single mother Dabney. The one thing that he talked about last night is he kind of took inspiration from the 90s skaters, right? Skateboarding and stuff. Jonah Hill's like, I was never a good skateboarder, so it's not fair to even put me in that class. But a lot of his inspiration he took from that type of atmosphere, if you will, for this show. And judging from the trailer that they showed last night and just listening to Jonah talk about it, I'm very interested. Very interested. Jonah sported a full beard last night, by the way, on the show.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. Tomato meter is at 91%. John, is that good?
Yeah, that's very good.
Yeah, that's good. That's well done there.
Want to see is at 95%. So
yeah, he was very excited to talk about it with Jimmy Fallon last night on Tonight Show. His directorial debut, Mid-90s. Something that we'll have to watch on the radar. And John, I'd look forward to hearing your review when you get a chance to see it. So sounds like it's out in Salt Lake at Jordan. You said Landing or Commons?
Jordan Landing.
So
it's out today because the schedule says it doesn't open until next week. But it is out in Jordan Landing today. That's interesting.
Is it today, okay. Devin? Was it today?
Yeah, it says it's playing at 7:15 tonight, 9:30.
Okay.
Or wait, sorry. Oh, whoa.
It is
next
week.
That's why I'm not seeing it. No, it's not until October 25th.
Which is next, no, following week, 2 weeks.
Yeah, we're 2 weeks out.
2 weeks out.
Look what you did, Alan. You got everyone excited, and now they can't see it.
Like, it looks like it was supposed to open in limited release on the 19th and then go to a few hundred more screens the week after.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get some buzz going.
Anyway, I'm intrigued. Wanted to get some buzz going here, too, because based off of his interview, his show on Fallon last night, it I'm intrigued, very intrigued. So worth checking out. Any other thoughts, news, and notes to throw into pop culture? John, you didn't have anything this week either, huh?
No, I didn't see any movies. Opening today is First Man with Ryan Gosling as Neil Armstrong.
Heard a lot about that.
El Royale, which is supposed to be this Tarantino type mystery noir thing that suddenly turns bloody at the end, and Goosebumps 2 with Jack Black. Those are your new wide releases this week.
Would like to see that.
And I still have not seen Venom or A Star Is Born.
And Venom, it sounds like that's making some good money in spite of all of its reviews, bad reviews.
Yep. It was a giant opener last week.
I got to ask, any word on First Man?
First Man's getting a lot of good reviews. Dark horse for Oscar buzz. It's at 89% right now. And it's from one of my favorite directors right now is Damien Chazelle. And he also directed La La Land. So it made sense for him to grab Ryan Gosling to get him to do this. So it's supposed to be really good.
I have seen it talked about a lot on my timeline.
That's one I actually wanted to see. And I think they're doing it in IMAX, which with a movie like that.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah,
it does. So
I may need to get out to a theater and check that one out.
All right. Well, that should do it for pop culture for this week. That will do it for this week's edition of Jedi and Germs. We want to thank you all for joining us. Look for us each and every week. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Jedi and Germs. You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts of Jedi and Germs. We appreciate your feedback, so come at us if you have some dark horses or additional thoughts on our awards today. And if you've seen Maniac, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, too. Hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, anywhere you follow us. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate you. We'll talk to you soon. John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.